Well, you've come through 8 weeks or so of the book of Hebrews, and I have the privilege of speaking on this last chapter. And it's a great chapter. And I love how chapter 13 flows on from the previous 12 chapters. And particularly, I want to look at how it flows on from chapter 12, which describes how, as followers of Jesus, we coexist with thousands upon thousands of angels. A heavenly community, a heavenly city with God as judge over all. Jesus, who by his blood shed, has cleansed a people for himself. In verse 23, we're described as the church of the firstborn whose names are written in heaven. Last week's sermon, probably. Well, with this backdrop of thousands of angels, it's said that we're receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And it describes a city that we look to. And Revelation 21 gives us a glimpse of the heavenly city coming down and being united with earth, a new heavens and a new earth. And here in chapter 12, we're urged to be thankful and worship God with reverence and awe. So the scene is set. And these verses remind us that heaven is happening as we sit here. Do you think about that sometimes? We coexist with those angels and the happenings of heaven. And that heaven is the kingdom that so far, it's like we've been looking through a keyhole, or we've dipped our toes in the ocean. That is heaven. Yet we know its goodness. We know Jesus, and we do well to heed the warning not to refuse God's offering and jump in boots and all to this kingdom life that he has for us. So today I hope that we'll be encouraged with this vision of heaven to live well. A vision that lets the supernatural, extraordinary reality infuse our daily living. Citizens of heaven, we are, living under Jesus' rule. Imperfectly, but I hope that this vision of heaven will help us to live more so under Jesus' rule, giving others who see us a glimpse of a better world by the way we live. Yeah? That's our witness to the world. And so my first point I've called strive forward in love, don't wait for an angel. So please have your Bibles ready, because I'm not going to read all these passages out again that have been already read. So you might follow it through in your Bible here in verses 1 to 3. Now, entertaining an angel might be pretty special if you were aware of it. But loving one another as brothers and sisters, kindness towards strangers, having compassion to those who are in prison and suffering, that is extraordinary. That is supernatural. That goes against our nature. But being other person-centred requires effort. But this is the life of the kingdom that we're called to. Will we embrace it? Verse 1, keep loving your fellow Christians. Now, some of us are harder to love than others. We can also work at being easier to love too, can't we? The word hospitality in chapter 2 actually means love of the stranger, that Greek word. And in ancient times, travel was dangerous and hotels were not a regular thing, so the traveller had to take risks. There was uncertainty on several levels. And upon reaching a city, apparently travellers would often rest outside the city wall, hoping that someone would invite them in and provide this hospitality, this love to the stranger. And there was this cultural expectation, apparently, that the willing host would wash their feet, which was the polite custom when you visited a home, prepare a lavish meal, provide rest, and then on the traveller side, the custom was not to stay more than two days, lest you outstay your welcome, which we could probably all identify with. When the Bible encourages us to be hospitable, it means to love the people that God brings across our path. Dare I say, it also encourages us to look for opportunities to love people. So I encourage you to pray for opportunities and courage to show that sort of love towards people in the realm. It might be your next door neighbour, it might be someone you walk past in the street, who knows where God might bring people from. Give them kingdom glimpses by how you love them. God sees. And of course, I hope and I presume that many of you are in the habit of showing that sort of love to your brothers and sisters here in the church. Looking for people who might be a bit lonely, invite them home for a meal, go and chat with them, encourage them, pray with them. That's the kingdom life. Verse 3, don't forget the prisoners and the mistreated. In first century Rome, prisoners were, they may have been persecuted Christians who'd just been rounded up for their faith. They may be a prisoner who'd committed a crime. They would often be prisoners of war. Either way, we're encouraged to be empathetic towards others in difficult circumstances. It's empathy that we're encouraged to embody. Put ourselves in somebody else's situation and feel for them. For contrast, Elon Musk on Joe Rogan podcast a month or so ago said, the fundamental weakness of Western civilization is empathy. How'd you be? He also mentioned that we don't want to be kinder than nature in weeding out the weak. That's a real sort of survival of the fittest sort of mentality, isn't it? And it concerns me on several levels, but it was pointed out in something I was reading. It reminded them of the Nuremberg trials after World War II, where it was noted that the one characteristic of all the Nazis on trial was their lack of empathy for their fellow men. Jesus' empathy for humanity characterized his life. His identification with us, his deep love that led him to give his life that we might be spared judgment and death and be joined to his community, that we be citizens of heaven. I want to follow that one. As far as angels go, that's a really weird line, isn't it? You may, unbeknown, have entertained an angel. I reckon I had an encounter with an angel one day. 40 years ago, I was backpacking in a remote mountain track in Peru. And I had a significant problem, and out of nowhere, and this is miles from anywhere, and this is a goat track, about 3,000 metres above sea level. It was crazy. And this man appeared. And without saying a word, he helped me. And I was stunned. And I looked up to thank him, and he'd gone. And I ran down the track, and there was nowhere to be seen. So, you know, maybe it was an angel. Who knows? But it reminded me that we coexist with this heavenly community. And it reminds me of the Lord's promise here in verse 5, never will I leave or forsake you. The moment back then was memorable for me. But if we want the extraordinary in our life, we get on with things. Rather than waiting for an angel to visit, we empathise, we demonstrate love to each other, to the stranger, to those in prison and those suffering. It means taking initiative. Doesn't often just land in our lap. This is building community. This is much of the work of Anglicare in our partnership with churches. Just help with our resources. But it's the responsibility of every Christian. More than that, however, it's how our lives become enriched. It's how we grow up in the faith. It's how we experience God in rich ways. If we're passive, we miss all of that. Second point, be content. Don't be sucked in by the empty promises of temptation. And you can see there in verses 4 to 7 and verse 17, this transition from the first three verses to verse four is a sudden jump from empathy towards others to the temptations of self-indulgence with regard to sex, money, and the response to church leadership. And a response will either build or undermine this community of God's people. Verse 4, about marriage and sex. Sex is a beautiful gift from God, but sexual relations outside marriage, whether it be to a married with a married person or as a single, it messes with God's intention. And I add that to the pornography, which both undermines and substitutes for married sex. It objectifies women, generally, and adds to the brokenness that we carry around. It's really a lose-lose here. Going down any of these rabbit holes will get us lost in the darkness. Now, God will judge sexual immorality, but consider how Jesus related to the people of his day, to the tax collectors and prostitutes, while the religious leaders scorned them. Jesus loved the people on the margins. There was much grace, much mercy, much engagement. And verses 5 to 6 speak of contentedness. And this will be, it'll be hard for people who feel lonely, and this is some sort of comfort. The promise of God is that never will he leave you. Never will he forsake you. And so we say with confidence, increasingly as we learn to lean on God, that the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can people do to me? That's a comfort. And our church community should be like this, both a model of God's way of living, but also a beacon and a shelter to those who struggle. A vision of heaven will help us keep our focus, righteous living and mercy to those who are struggling. The money one, verse 5, keep your lives free from the love of money. And isn't that just another temptation that our society bombards us with time and time again? Money offers so much but delivers much less. I say that because we need money, and life in Sydney is expensive. But how will we use our money? And we all have, let's face it, excess. I work with refugees who have fled their countries with a suitcase. We're all pretty wealthy, even if we've got a big mortgage and even if we're struggling with employment issues. It's easy to judge each other around money, though, isn't it? We all have various experiences, life experience that contribute to our attitude towards money. I grew up in a fairly wealthy family, yet I saw my dad constantly worrying about money. He was miserable. My work in Indigenous communities and with refugees has made me keenly aware of how wealthy I am and what my responsibility is to use my money to bring blessing to others. And every time I do, I'm reminded that this is the Lord's money entrusted to me to use well. And I've often thought on that last day, when I stand before the Lord, I'm not going to be regretting being generous or even overly generous. I'm going to be regretting being stingy, aren't I? So for reasons of inheritance or income, each of us have to grapple with this love of money and the level of generosity we're willing to practice. Telling point, what will our children see in our attitude towards money? Will they see citizens of heaven modelling contentedness, modelling generosity to those on the margins? Or will they observe us striving for more money, what money can buy, more than the things of God? So a vision of heaven will help us to use our money well, if we can grasp the eternal nature of life, that kid's song, Jesus Being King, we can't ignore. It was spot on. It's really good. So investing in that rather than the transitory wealth of this age, of this life. The other temptation for us is around leadership. And verse 7 encourages us to remember our leaders who have taught us from the scriptures, to be like them as they've been like Jesus. And it speaks about submitting in verse 17 to authority, and you can read through that. It's a hard one, because often we see flaws in our leaders. In 27 years of ministry, I've worked under a variety of leaders, and like each of us, they're flawed human beings. They're on a journey. They're growing to be more like Jesus. I've had some fairly significant clashes with people I've worked under, but one thing I've learned that strikes me in verse 17 there, they've been appointed to watch over the congregation. They'll be required to give an account to the Lord. Extra responsibility for leaders before God. So they've got more skin in the game. Nowadays, I still have strong opinions. I manage to express my opinions to my bishop and even tangle with the archbishop sometimes. Sometimes I think I might influence decisions. I'm still frustrated when things don't go the way I think they should. But I've learned to become keen not to be a burden to them. I want to encourage them. I want to support them and respect them, maybe bring some joy to their role. And I hope you have that in mind in this church with your leadership here. I think this church is doing pretty well, but some people get sort of distracted by the things that they would like to change. I'm oblivious of those, so I just say it because I know every church has got them. So a vision of heaven, I think, will help us to be gracious towards and supportive of our leaders, and when we disagree, to do so respectfully. As fellow citizens of heaven, we're all in the same boat here. I love the line in the Lord's Prayer, "Your will be done as it is in heaven." That prayer is that through living under Jesus' rule, we might bring glimpses of God's will being done on earth as it is in heaven to those around us. They look at us and they see a glimpse of a better world. Maybe it's a good thing to pray at the beginning of each day, "Lord, let me be a glimpse. Teach me, lead me by your Spirit. Help me to grow, overcome sin, help me to love." And he answers those sorts of prayers. The third point, Jesus is Lord, praise and serve, wraps up so much. Jesus, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. All the ceremony and rituals that mark the Old Covenant, you've been through those in recent weeks. The high priest, the Holy of Holies, the bodies of animals burnt outside the camp. Jesus, our high priest, whose life started in a feed trough, ministered as a homeless wanderer, died outside the city gate, forsaken that we might never be forsaken. The next few verses bring it home. "Let us then go to him outside the camp, where the strangers are, bearing the disgrace he bore. For we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come, that heavenly city." So I encourage you, let's be looking for that heavenly city, loving the stranger, willing to forgo the distractions of this non-enduring city, Sydney, Narellan, in order to serve Jesus, keeping an eye out for that future city that is yet to come. We are the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. I sort of think we could be a little bit more radical in the expression of our faith, don't you? I need constant reminders to, because I'm lazy, I need constant reminders to step up and live as that citizen of heaven, invest in that future city that is yet to come. A few years ago, I said to my daughter Charlotte, she's 30 now, just got engaged, but when she was a teenager, I said to her, don't let me get boring as I get older. And she's remembered that. The context was that we can become comfortable and risk averse and distracted from the Lord's work. Or we can take each stage of our life as an opportunity to more deeply grasp the love of Jesus and just see him at work in our lives. There's no time for rest. I mean, heaven is rest. But there's plenty of time for joy, because as we see the Lord at work in our lives, there's a strengthening, there's a refreshing, there's a joy that will come. I just thought I'd finish with a little bit of, I suppose, some of the things that I've been challenged to do, because things don't often land in our lap. But prayerful open eyes will see what God is offering. And when I was doing teacher training, I decided to explore teaching in First Nations communities. And so I applied, and the next year I was prac teaching on Palm Island off Ingham, Townsville. And the following year I was teaching full-time on Thursday Island. I spent 3 years there. Life-changing experience. Seeing refugees coming to Australia, I began talking with people and churches around the Northern Beaches. And then I got talking with the Premier, Mike Baird, who was, I knew, from church in Manly. And we started the charity and settled 10 Syrian families. Man, I had no idea what I was doing, but God raised up the right people. And that was life-changing for me as well. And one good deed leads to another, and I was asked by one of our schools to mentor two Muslim boys from Afghanistan. They live in Liverpool, so it's a bit of a trek to the Northern Beaches, but we meet about four times a year as a group, and we go on outings and we get to know them, and they know we're Christians. So, you know, to think, give it a go. Either start something or join something that somebody else has started and serve in new ways and see that the Christian life is an adventure if we're prepared to step up. If we're going to be passive, we don't grow, and you know, it's I don't think it's interesting, and we get distracted. I get distracted by things like sex, money, power, leadership, personal differences, but they're distractions. We need to recognize them for what we are, what they are, and be that citizen of heaven. So think about what distracts you and what you might do about it. quick plug for Anglicare. Anglicare works with churches giving communities glimpses of heaven. You know, we just use our resources, as I said earlier. I've mentioned some of the things that we do, but the one I saved for the end was foster care. Foster children, well, children who need foster care, it may be because of the death of a parent, it may be financial, mental health, drug issues, all sorts of issues. But look at the stats there. It's massive. And Anglicare is seeking to build within churches supportive structures so a foster carer isn't doing it alone. They've got people in the churches who might mow the lawns or cook a meal, or families with children similar age going on outings, so that these little children who've had a rough start in life can experience something of healthy family and Christian community. How good is that? Let's have a quick look at this video.
Every week in New South Wales, over 100 children seek a family home through foster care. Just three will find one. Oh, we have all kinds of children in foster care. We have newborn babies from hospital. We have children in their toddler years. We also have teenagers. These are children whose families have not been able to care for that. These are children whose families have experienced trauma, have experienced issues with drug and alcohol or mental health. That brings challenges for children. But we know that the brain is capable of healing. And we know the safe and loving, supporting homes actually make a difference and can heal children from the trauma that they've experienced.
The foster care crisis is not distant. It's a local reality and it's urgent. And I think the church has a really unique role to play. We of all people have been included into God's family. And so we know what it means to be loved and accepted and included. Ephesians chapter 1 and Galatians 4 are two examples.
Well, our entire experience of foster care has been in the context of the church community. And I really think the church is uniquely positioned to support this kind of ministry. There's this larger community, it's multi-generational, there are peers for the kids, there are youth leaders, grandparents in the congregation, and they're all invested and they all have a sense of responsibility for our kids. So they've all played that beautiful village kind of role. Our Bible study group have always walked very closely on the journey with us and been able to get much more into the nitty-gritty and the detail.
Our church has supported us in so many ways. We were really blessed by it.
And if they will partner with the church, really from the first inquiry that someone makes, right through the whole journey, and also partner alongside the church. We'll resource you, we'll provide the support and care that you need, both for those that are going the journey in terms of care, and also for the church as they seek to support and come alongside.
If I could say one thing, it would be that if one family from every church across the Sydney Diocese stepped up to be foster carers, there would be no children in hotels tonight. There'd actually be more families looking to care for children than children needing those families. We encourage you to reach out to us today to start the conversation.
Wow, tugs my heartstrings every time I see that. So there's a famous Bible verse, but there's plenty of others. And let's have a look at this next slide and finish with that. What if? What if? This is a kingdom of God thing. This is a massive impact our churches across Sydney could make. What a blessing, what a witness. Thanks for having me today. I've got a table at the back. Love to chat with you over morning tea. Thank you.